You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 9th of September, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I took a couple of days off over Labor Day and I went to go see a cat circus. It was a circus made up entirely of domestic cats. So this is what I consider fun. This is what I consider a vacation. It's bad enough that I actually took a couple of days off. But that's what I did with it? I don't know. Maybe I'm going crazy, but it was worth it.
Isn't that what they call a busman's holiday? I mean, it can't really have been that much different to what life is like at home, can it? Going to see a cat circus? Really? Did you really go to see a cat circus, Matt? Is there such a thing?
It is absolutely true. They're called the Acrocats. But that's a good point. My whole life is a cat circus around here. You're absolutely right.
Perhaps you could train yours to have a go at it. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about the debt ceiling and also America is apparently going to default on the debt yet again. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned Congress that the U.S. is headed for a default on its national debt, a warning that has been issued many times before, with the Fed's money printer always coming to the rescue. In a Wednesday letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Yellen warned default was coming sooner rather than later. Even the country's emergency financial resources would be gone come October, she lamented. The US may be unable to meet its obligations for the first time in our history, Yellen wrote, adding that all available cash on hand and extraordinary measures previously employed will soon be exhausted. Perhaps in an effort to make her current warning stand out from the others, Yellen said that it would be particularly irresponsible to put the full faith and credit of the United States at risk at a time when American families and businesses are still suffering from the effects of the ongoing global pandemic. A delay on raising the debt ceiling would not only make the federal government look irresponsible, it would likely cause irreparable damage to the US economy and global financial markets, Yellen wrote, noting that business and consumer confidence were at stake along with the country's credit rating. As of Wednesday, the US national debt stands at upwards of $28.8 trillion, compared to a meager $3.85 trillion in tax revenues. I mean, that is... That's astounding, that is. There's about 10 times more debt than there actually is taxes to actually pay for this. Matt, why doesn't this all just collapse? I mean, what is going on here? How can they have 10 times as much debt than taxes that they can actually raise? Who could actually pay out that much money knowing that they're never going to get the money back? What's going on here?
Well, remember, that's just federal government debt. You have even a larger number. Debt that belongs to consumers and private corporations. And that doesn't even include state and local debt, which is extremely high. That also doesn't include interest. So you're talking about a ridiculous – there's not enough dollars in existence to pay this, even if it were possible. But just for people who don't know, the debt ceiling actually has been around a long time. It's the maximum amount – that the Treasury can borrow, and that is, you know, issuing Treasury bonds. And it actually goes back to 1917, statutory debt limit, it's called. And these extraordinary measures, I think, are largely mythical, because if there was any cash on hand, politicians would find some way to use it. Pentagon would take it. I think those are largely mythical. The deeper issue, though, is if the system, if the regime as a whole can't print this kind of money and do what it pleases, they can't bail out the banks. This is, you know, one of the ways that they do that. Yellen, all these groups they work for. There's no difference, of course, between Federal Reserve and private banks. It's one institution. Same thing for the IMF, the World Bank, and all these financial institutions. So they're far more worried about, their profits are often based on taxpayer dollars, floating bonds, whatever, to rescue them from their bad decisions. That's really what this is about.
Well, it just seems to me they have this pantomime once a year or every 6 months, and they pretend that they're not going to actually increase it, and that means that nobody's going to get paid and government all comes to a halt. And then right at the last minute, they do increase it. Everybody does get paid, and it gets rolled on for another year. But, I mean, you can't just keep on doing this on into eternity. Isn't this just a repeat of the same? Well, despite the desperate pageantry that accompanies the manoeuvre each time, the country is no stranger to raising the debt ceiling. Since its establishment in 1917, Congress has moved to raise, extend, or revise the debt limit on over 100 occasions. It has never actually been lowered. Congress froze the debt ceiling at $22 trillion in 2019 as part of a two-year budget deal with the Trump administration. But that suspension ended in 2021, with the government in no better position to deal with reducing spending costs. To avoid breaching the limit, as that suspension came to an end in July, Yellen stepped in with extraordinary measures, suspending investments in the civil service and postal service retirement funds, among others, keeping the proverbial patient on life support. The reanimation of the debt ceilings crisis couldn't have come at much worse a time, with House Democrats eager to pass a $3.51 trillion spending package on top of a $1 trillion infrastructure bill that the Senate has already approved. The US national debt has skyrocketed since the pandemic began, with the Federal Reserve in 2020 alone having printed a severely outsized proportion of all the US dollars issued since the founding of the country. Some sources have suggested last year's issue constitutes nearly a quarter of total Fed printing, while others place the number at 40% or higher. That's almost half of all the dollars ever printed were printed last year just to cover up this deficit. I mean, this really can't go on for much longer, Matt, surely.
This is it's an incredible thing, and most people, especially our people, don't fully realize what's going on. You asked why it doesn't collapse entirely, and there are a few reasons. Paul Craig Roberts, one of my favorite economics writers out there, gave three. One of them is that you have other central banks also, doing the quantitative easing, printing money, Japan, the EU, and the Bank of England. So there's a certain cancellation there, and then of course, once this happens, the gold price goes up. So what the Federal Reserve does is it starts shorting. We had a whole show on this, shorting gold futures, which is just pieces of paper, trying to drive down the gold price. They don't actually own gold, but they have pieces of paper saying they own gold. They could use that. And then, money managers, pension funds, all this, they want to make money. They want to go along with what amounts to a Ponzi scheme. And most people, the average person, just doesn't fully understand how this works. But it will fall apart when it becomes impossible to continue to support the dollar because it's burdened by these ridiculous levels of debt. But this is part of the foreign policy issue. Washington's hegemony over much of the world, which is falling apart now, means that if any one of these defects and they stop supporting the dollar, you'll have other major banks doing the same. Then it would unravel. You need constant pressure, military or otherwise, on the central banks of the major economies, and hope to God that China doesn't continue to dump. You had Ireland dumping dollars. Russians have been doing the same. But remember, most of this debt is owned to the major banks who sit on the Federal Reserve. These are the people who are buying bonds. They're not the only people buying bonds. No one trusts and you notice what Yellen said, that the U.S. is subject to the banks. It's subject to, Moody's rating, which gives the U.S. a artificially high rating, The Chinese Dogong, however, gives it, you know, mid-range rating, which is probably more accurate. So they're talking about these very powerful people controlling the so-called creditworthiness of the country. Well, if these people believe in free markets, well, they obviously don't. Actually, I don't think anyone really does, because if the market were allowed to function, you would have mass default everywhere. But capitalism does not believe in the free market, rejects the free market, and demands these kind of subsidies.
Well, it seems to me the rest of the world just, you know, it can just sit back and wait for America to collapse. If it's borrowing at this kind of a rate, there's almost near zero interest rates. April's 4.2% past year increase in the consumer price index is not likely to dissuade the Federal Reserve from continuing its policy of near zero interest rates. Fed Chairman Jeremy Powell believes the rising prices are just a temporary phenomenon caused by the ending of lockdowns, releasing pent-up consumer demand. Powell may be right that the ending of lockdowns would inevitably be accompanied by a rise in prices. However, this is just the latest reason the Fed has given for putting off increasing interest rates. Powell does not want to admit that the real reason the Fed will continue to keep rates low is that increasing rates will cause the federal government's interest payments to rise to unsustainable levels. One way the Fed increases the money supply and thus lowers interest rates is by purchasing US Treasury securities. These purchases increase demand for US government debt, keeping government's borrowing costs low. An expansionary monetary policy thus enables increased federal spending and deficits. Since the lockdowns, the Fed has worked overtime to monetize federal debt, doubling its holdings of Treasury securities. Well, isn't the payments already unsustainable? I mean, they say that they can't let the interest go up anymore because it would be unsustainable, but just all the principal is unsustainable, let alone if there was any interest on top. What do you make of what's being said here, Matt?
Well, first of all, again, this is some of the things that our people need to learn about. Debt monetization. Sometimes they call it monetary financing. This is when the Treasury will borrow money from the Federal Reserve. That ends up, you know, that finances all kinds of public spending rather than selling bonds to the private sector. I don't really see a huge difference because the Federal Reserve is the private sector. But when we use the phrase printing money, this is what we're talking about. And in some places, it's not, for some countries, it's not permitted because this is what causes runaway inflation. But the entire thing, we'll say, mention here in a minute, what the real government debt is. You've had since 2008. By the way, I know that you know, especially Republicans, the Tucker Carlson's of the world, they definitely listen to this show. Because almost everything these guys are saying now, whether it be Afghanistan or finances, we were saying first, I don't know, a year ago or more. All the things that they're saying now, we were the first, as far as I know, to say or to write. And now they're saying it like it's revelation, which drives me crazy. And this is one more thing. We've been talking about this on this show for at least 2 years, long before there was any COVID nonsense. So So I think we're a lot more powerful than people realize in that respect. But now what's going to happen is that these people are going to blame COVID for everything. And I've been saying that for years. Well, since the COVID came out, feels like it was a lot longer, that they could blame this virus for all of their own irresponsibility and stupidity. So the average American thinks, well, this is the virus is causing this problem, not the regime itself, which is one of the great side effects of COVID for them.
Well, I can recall doing podcasts with you and wondering what it was they were going to blame for why all of this happened. And because we knew the economy was going to crash. I mean, it had to with that much debt, but they had to come out with some kind of an excuse for it. Well, the actual federal debt is even more than what we're being told. A Truth in Accounting report from April concluded the real federal debt is $123 trillion. Over four times larger than the $28 trillion official debt. The higher debt calculation includes the federal government's unfunded liabilities. The biggest unfunded liabilities are the $55 trillion in promised but unfunded Medicare benefits and the $41 trillion in promised but unfunded Social Security benefits. Congress could transition away from entitlement and welfare programs without harming current or soon-to-be beneficiaries by cutting spending on militarism and corporate welfare. Part of the savings from these cuts could be used to pay down the debt, and part could be used to provide payments for current and soon-to-be beneficiaries of government programs while we transition to a free market. Unfortunately, there is not much appetite in Congress for spending cuts. The main Democratic criticisms of President Biden's $1.52 trillion budget, which increases spending by 8.4%, are that Biden is not proposing bigger increases in spending and debt, or in taxes on the rich. Biden's budget increases are in addition to the trillions in other spending Biden is pursuing, including that related to COVID, infrastructure, and his American Families Plan. Republicans are making obligatory attacks on Biden's spending while also attacking Biden for increasing military spending to only $753 billion. Republican complaints about Biden's big spending ring hollow given their support for Presidents Donald Trump and George W. Bush's spending increases and Republicans' proposals to spend billions on infrastructure. Well, at least Donald Trump did try to pause it for 2 years. I mean, Biden's just going straight into it, isn't he? What, $1.52 trillion budget? I mean, I've heard even more than that that he's planning on actually spending. But how can they get away with not funding Social Security and not funding Medicare and not funding the pensions for all your mail workers, Matt? I mean, how do they get away with not funding it? Please tell us.
Well, I guess COVID didn't kill the huge number of old people that they were hoping. So the elderly, you know, 65 and up, not elderly, but older population is very powerful. Biden, we don't mean Biden like Joe Biden. He doesn't know that he's president. We're talking about the, you know, BlackRock, people who control that institution. He's hoping that the media is simply going to cover for him. The infrastructure bill, we all know that has very little to do with infrastructure. Most of that money will never get there. You have billions of dollars that has still yet to go to support small business and kind of the Main Street bailouts that were promised under Trump and now. The American Families Plan is more nonsense. It has a lot to do with free education and things like that. But I think because people don't understand the technicalities of finance and the fiscal issues, other than, you know, debit and credit and debt, a lot of this stuff will simply go over their heads. I'm noticing in financial reporting in New York Times and elsewhere, they deliberately use a lot of technical terms that even educated people aren't familiar with. I remember I was in college when when the budget hit $1 trillion and the Heritage Foundation went crazy over it. But, you know, for them to go after entitlements, and entitlement is a terrible word, at a time right now where something like 60% of American workers couldn't afford a one-bedroom apartment, which a recent study that just came out, hit the news, it's just a few days ago, that the unemployment being well over 30%, inflation is going to go through, it's already going through the roof. And what these people are saying and doing, the gymnastics, mental gymnastics they're going through to try to justify that, is laughable. But when you have the media who's deliberately obfuscating all of this, when you have politicians who really don't know or care, they're mostly lawyers, and then you have, I mean, what is more ignorant than someone blaming this cipher, Joe Biden, for the failure in Afghanistan? We were talking about that 5 years ago on this show. So playing politics is so ridiculous because it's really all these people know. Certainly that's all the media knows. No one's going to watch a news broadcast on interest rates and qualitative easing. They want to see this drama. They want to see the reality show that is Congress. And frankly, they have very little to do with how money functions. The big banks control them. Big banks like politicians because they can blame them for when things go wrong, and they always do. And remember, you have states in America that have constitutional amendments saying they have to have a balanced budget every year. Well, none of them do, generally speaking. North Dakota maybe is an exception. All they do is they take things off budget. They just lie. So in a sense, Yeah, Yellen's talking about American default. I think America's been in essentially default mode for a long time. They just don't call it that. It's like depression. They refuse to use the word depression. They use recession for everything, even though we've been in a massive recession since the depression since at least the early 90s. Everything is based on financial instruments. So this is simply, you know, playing politics with this and using slogans, not really explaining what's happening. Mass inflation, I've said it 100 times. There's not going to be, that there is a massive meltdown here. The difference is that most Americans will not know is happening. You have mass poverty, 30% unemployment at least, and people aren't reacting as if this is a massive crisis.
You know, people create things. We add value to things. We should have masses of savings. We shouldn't have a huge, great mountain of debt while everybody is, you know, working crazy to create things. It should be completely the opposite way around. And one of the regular memes that we see is the money printer goes burr meme. And it's very true. In 2020, the Federal Reserve printed unprecedented amounts of money to support the coronavirus-stricken economy. This sparked debates about inflation and helped asset prices to soar. Data from the Fed shows that a broad measure of the stock of dollars, known as M2, rose from $15.34 trillion at the start of the year to $18.72 trillion in September. The increase of $3.38 trillion equates to 18% of the total supply of dollars. It means almost $1 in $5 was created in 2020. M2 includes physical notes and coins, bank reserves held at the Fed, accounts at banks, and money market mutual funds. A narrower measure of money, known as the monetary base or the MO, which is physical money and bank reserves at the Fed, rose from $3.44 trillion in January to $4.8 trillion last August. That is a 28% jump. The huge growth in the stock of dollars reflects the massive interventions in the economy by the Fed, which is in control of the US money supply. In the spring, as markets crashed and normal life was paused, it pumped around $3 trillion into the economy. Although it is often described as printing money, the Fed in practice creates digital dollars to buy up government bonds and other securities in the secondary market. The policy, known as quantitative easing, aims to flood the markets with cash to keep borrowing cheap. Banks also create money when they lend. Most money in the economy is created this way, and only about $2 trillion are actually in circulation as physical currency. What the Federal Reserve did is in no way unique, said Eric Norland, senior economist at the CME Group. He said the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, and others created money at a similar rate. Norland said they were reacting to a contraction in credit, which is the lifeblood of the economy. In order to offset a contraction in credit, the central bank has to create a lot of money to make sure the economy keeps functioning. And of course, this credit that is actually lent out is then recorded as debt. So it just builds up the debt mountain all the more. I mean, it's really quite bizarre when you look at credit and debit, the way that it can just flick between one or the other. And it should actually be seen as value, created value. The capital that is there, it should be. People say they want to take out a loan. That money is then created. They then work to pay that loan back. And when they work to pay that loan back, they're creating value in the world. That value doesn't just disappear. The people themselves have created something that is of value. And yet it all gets recorded as being debt. And then on top of that, now you've got them just creating extra money that hasn't actually even been lent into the economy or borrowed into the economy, which is this quantitative easing. I mean, it's just absolute chaos, Matt.
It should be pointed out that this quantitative easing. Sorry, I said qualitative before. This is often recorded as economic growth by the major institutions. But let's be clear here. QE. We're talking about the Federal Reserve purchasing government bonds or any financial asset. This is how they inject money into the economy. They think they're expanding economic activity. That's what they say in public. But the reality is, this is a massive subsidy to the 0.005% of the income earners in this country. But even, you know, Theresa May in 2016 did say she had one positive thing to say. And she said that, you know, when this happens, it's monetary policy, the super low interest rates, quantitative easing, that only affects the super wealthy. And that cash that's sent to – it's all corporate American and banks. It ends up being profits. They're not using this for anything. They consider this a profit. And it just increases how usury functions. In a non-usurious economy, and then you have some of the Islamic banking practices and, of course, all the Christian world up until not too long ago, as you said, it isn't the money. It's the asset. So someone loans someone money to build something. The person loaning the money isn't charging interest on the cash. It's now a partner in whatever it is that's being created. So if the enterprise fails, the money is not going to be paid back. While in the West, you know, in the liberal West, it doesn't matter. Even if it fails, you still want that money back because it's the money that's being increased, not the asset. So non-usury, you have, as you say, the concern is in capital and what is being created. That's what the creditor ends up being your partner. That's what matters. Not and so interest is taken from the profits of the enterprise. That's what a non-usury based economy is, which is exactly, I think, what you were talking about here. So this quantitative, this is simply a way to subsidize the super wealthy, giving it this kind of name in a difficult economy. And it all ends up being profits, stock buybacks, everything to create the illusion of prosperity, but it's only prosperity for a handful.
This is what happens when you legalize usury. You basically end up in this sort of a mess. Well, as we pointed out before, the virus is now being blamed for this. For major owners of capital, the COVID pandemic has been a perfect pretext and scapegoat for an obsolete economy failing due to its own intrinsic logic and dynamics. COVID has been a convenient and timely cover for the ongoing global economic decline that started well before the COVID pandemic, as we've been documenting here at Radio Albion. It is much easier to blame the failure of the economic system on extenuating circumstances or external factors like a virus, rather than the internal operation of the anachronistic economic system itself. This is especially true given the never-ending series of virus variants that keep appearing. In other words, deep economic problems will persist and worsen in the coming months and years. It is well known that the capitalist economic system goes through endless crises, booms and busts, recessions, corrections, and depressions. Stability, security, harmony, peace, and prosperity for all are absent under such an outmoded system. It is impossible for such an economic system to develop in a balanced way, where all sectors operate in a mutually conditioning manner and are not distorted all the time. Advanced commodity production means there is no unity in production and consumption, no conscious organization of the economy for the benefit of society and its members. Modern nation building is not possible under such conditions. And that's because we forgot that the economy is there for the benefit of us. And what we're at the moment doing is we are there for the benefit of the economy. What do you make of what is being said here, Matt?
Well, this is actually a leftist publication. And our people have to get rid of the old prejudice, the so-called free market that does not exist, in at least at this level. In theory, it's nice at the local level, which is what Adam Smith meant for it. But this is – they have nothing – this has nothing to do with the market. It's vehemently opposed to the market. This notion of boom and bust that was inherently unstable, this means that when the when the regime fails, when they simply gamble too much and the thing comes crashing down for a while like in 2008, they could say, well, that's just part of the nature of capitalism. That's the nature of freedom. This kind of thing happens. They'll call it a correction or something like that. Oh, it's a temporary recession. And this is how they justify what they've done. They have a million different ways of covering their tracks. And without a knowledge of how, you know, economics actually works, it's really easy to fall into it. That's what they – this whole – yeah, it's inherently unstable. That's what freedom is. This is what capitalism is. It's not our fault. It's just built into the nature of the system. So this is the kind of thing that we should be talking about. It's important.
Well, one thing that is for certain is that vaccines won't fix the problem. The notion that capital-centered politicians and policymakers can or will fix things is irrational. No major problems have been solved in decades. Every day there are new reports on how numerous conditions are deteriorating at home and abroad. Unemployment, underemployment, debt, poverty, and inequality are all pervasive under this capitalist system. All of this is taking place despite the fact that hundreds of millions of people have been vaccinated. Vaccines have simply not stabilized the economy. The economy remains uneven and distorted in numerous ways. The rich and their political and media representatives cannot find a way out of the current crisis. They never overcame the 2008 crisis or the effects of previous crises. Their policies and agendas just keep making things worse. Even if every individual on the planet were vaccinated 11 times, economic and social decay would persist. To date, no amount of fiscal or monetary policy has stabilized the economy and made it work for everyone. Instead, the economy keeps lurching from problem to problem and crisis to crisis, while the rich get richer and everyone is left with a sinking feeling about what lies ahead. The big topic right now is runaway inflation. The price of dozens of products and items keeps climbing, like food, gas, housing and cars, while wages and salaries stagnate or fall behind, which means that the majority are simply not getting ahead. And of course, this is why they've come out with this idea of the Great Reset, and you won't actually own anything. You'll just be paying rent to the richest people in the world. That's how I understand this Great Reset to be. Anyway, Matt, what are your final thoughts here? And am I correct in thinking that's what the Great Reset is?
You know, I'd much rather talk about the cat circus, but unfortunately, we have to stay on this topic. The whole notion of you're generally correct on this. We're on this show. We talked about never leaving the 2008 crisis. What happens is, you have a massive crisis, you have massive unemployment, you have small businesses collapsing, people get used to it. And then the next crisis comes along and it gets a little worse, people get used to that. So what we consider full employment, we consider normal, would be deep depression 30, 40 years ago. That's another way the system works. We predicted on this show there's going to be variants to COVID. I even said they're going to have a scary sounding Greek names. These people are not, you know, they're easily predictable here. They could always have a new variant, a new disease, a new disaster. They could blame it on all kinds of people. They could use the other. And this is, look, when it comes down to it, this is the kind of thing that's going to lead to war. Because the way that BlackRock thinks, the only way that they're going to be able to, other than the Great Reset itself, of course, is forgiving debt in exchange for assets, which means they'll take everything. That's ultimately what it comes. That's the main slogan of it. That's why you don't own anything, because they're taking assets to settle this debt. But war can unify the population, jumpstart the economy, and have the federal government, like in World War II, take over directly with Federal Reserve, of course, the private sector, take over the economy and run it for that purpose. You know, the Great Depression ended because World War II happened. And it's a terrifying idea that going to war with China is going to be the only thing that saves the regime. Although I can't imagine that's a long-term solution.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. One thing is certain, though, isn't it? The coronavirus has been an absolute boon to the oligarchs and the totalitarians. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.